If you hate being told what you can and can't say, you're going to love this. This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another weekly dose of common sense. I'm Corey Bernardi, and it's my pleasure to take you through some of the absurd events that have happened in the last week or so, both in Australian and international politics, but also we're going to highlight some of the craziness of this radical agenda that is undermining our way of life, our values and our principles. We're going to throw that blanket of common sense. We're going to talk some non-PC language about the things that need to happen. And it's great that you're here to come on this journey with us. Of course, I'm going to go through your say as well, because the emails continue to come in. And I'd like to suggest that for those of you who want to get your voice on the podcast, it's very, very easy. The only thing you've got to do is record a voice memo and send that through to Corey at CoreyBernardi.com. That way, you'll get your voice on the podcast and I can respond to your questions, because there's nothing worse than just having my voice on this podcast all the time. I'm sure we need other inputs. Now, this week, not only are we going to have your say, I'm going to talk about one of the most contentious discussions of the last week. No, it's not about Barnaby Joyce and his family matters. It is about Western civilization. Who would have thought it could be such a controversial issue? And we're going to go through the bequest of the Ramsey Foundation to create a center for Western civilization that is apparently too hot a topic for our leading universities to get involved with. We're also going to talk about some things that make you go, and I'm going to explore one of those in more substance than perhaps normal, and that is the travesty, this abuse of process that a journalist named Sonia Kruger has been subject to. And it's been dragged on for two or more years, and her great crime? To have a voice on immigration that doesn't fit in with the zeitgeist, even though it's shared by a great many Australians. So we're going to talk about that from a values perspective. We'll get a bit of Australian history in there, a bit of Western civilization. It is a long march through the institutions by the Conservatives. It's great to have you with us, so let's get into it.
Welcome to the home of the Conservative Revolution. This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Welcome back. This is your weekly dose of common sense. I'm Corey Bernardi, and we like to celebrate success. And in particular, we like to recognise the good works that people do as they've achieved their success. Now, one of the most successful Australians, he's sadly passed away, was a chap named Paul Ramsey. Now, Paul Ramsey started out as a land surveyor, but he later established a private psychiatric clinic in Sydney. And that morphed into the Ramsey Healthcare Empire. It grew over successive decades. It created hospitals in Australia, in the USA, the UK, and Hong Kong. And it was successfully floated on the stock exchange about 20 years ago, and it's now one of the largest private hospital operators anywhere in the world. It's got about 212 hospitals, employs more than 50,000 people, treats over 2 million patients every year. It made Mr. Ramsey a very, very wealthy man. He invested in television networks. Importantly, he was also a magnificently generous benefactor to a variety of educational, cultural, artistic, political, and sporting organisations. He was quite rightly honoured with an Officer of the Order of Australia in 2002 for services to the community. And he passed away, but in his passing, he wasn't content to have his memory attributed to simply past deeds. He made one of the most extraordinary endowments, bequests, that his wealth, some $3 billion, was put into a philanthropic trust. The Ramsey Centre for Western Civilization is a beneficiary of that to the tune of some $30 million a year. And the mission of the Ramsey Centre is quite straightforward. It says to advance education by promoting studies and discussion associated with the establishment and development of Western civilization, including through establishing scholarship funds and educational courses in partnership with universities. They go on. They're going to collaborate with teachers and students at universities and high schools, as well as members of the wider community, in order to foster and promote an interest in and awareness of Western civilization. They say they're going to be creating Bachelor of Arts degrees in Western civilization in collaboration with two or three Australian universities, initially in New South Wales and the ACT, but also, if possible, further afield. They're going to support these degrees through a suite of undergraduate scholarships and the creation of new academic positions. It's going to endow a National Ramsay Postgraduate Scholarships open to recent Australian graduates from a range of disciplines. It's going to further study, it's going to further academia, and it's going to establish a program of summer schools, distinguished visiting lectures and other events designed to promote a wider appreciation of Western civilization. Who would have thought that was controversial? But apparently it is. Apparently it's too controversial for our leading university in the Australian National University, who rejected the call to have the Ramsay Centre established within their confines. Now, the approach by the university might be summed up when you have a look at the board of directors of the Ramsay Centre. It's chaired by that great Australian, John Howard, the former Prime Minister. It's also got on the board the Honourable Tony Abbott, another former Prime Minister. But there's also a conservative unionist there, Joe de Bruin, who has upheld Western civilizational values for his entire life. You've got a range of Ramsay Healthcare Professional Board members. You've also got the member for Barowra, Julian Lisa. And you've got the principal of the Queenwood School, Elizabeth Stone, among others. Now, yeah, sure, it's top-heavy with, you know, perhaps liberal-leaning or conservative-leaning people, but Western civilization is worth conserving. You have to understand your past in order to protect and defend your future. But our universities aren't interested in that. They're interested in having Confucius centres sponsored by the Chinese government. They're interested in having Arab studies and Islamic centres sponsored by Middle Eastern governments. But they will not have a centre for Western civilization supported by the legacy of a magnificent Australian. And Greg Sheridan, you know I'm a fan of his. Greg Sheridan wrote a great article in The Australian entitled "Big Unis Too Illiberal for the West, but Others Can Seize the Day." And I want to quote from it. He says, "The ANU experience should force the Ramsay Centre to completely reevaluate its model." The ANU experience, by the way, is the rejection of the Ramsay Centre. "This moment," and I go back to quoting, "this moment is a pivot point in our history, not just because it demonstrates what has happened to our universities. Confucius centres funded by the Chinese government abound. Our universities have taken money from Arab governments to sponsor Middle East studies. And the various peace study centres are comprehensively involved in advocacy. But a centre to study Western civilization is beyond the pale." We knew all that already, though the ANU case demonstrates once more how deeply illiberal our universities have become. But this is a pivotal point in another way. Paul Ramsay's philanthropic bequest of something in the order of $3 billion is special in Australian history. It offers an extremely rare and precious chance to do something positive for our culture, to make a difference. It could not have a wiser statesman as its chairman than John Howard. And until he was appointed Governor of Western Australia, Kim Beazley was also on the board. It is non-partisan and one of the most constructive initiatives in recent Australian history. There is a real chance now, however, that its endowment, its generosity and its goodwill could all be wasted. Any negotiation with a public university will take place in the shadow of the political campaign that destroyed the Ramsay Initiative at the ANU. In negotiating with the universities, the Ramsay Centre could find itself in an analogous position to Barack Obama negotiating with Iran. A deal can be done, but only at the price of abandoning the core purpose of the deal in the first place. In talking about this initiative in recent months, I haven't met a single independent observer who thinks it can work as designed. even if a course is sponsored with a title such as The Development of Political Liberalism in Medieval Europe, it could well end up having an effective subtitle like Critical Theory, Insights into Demonizing the Others in the Christo-Authoritarian Patriarchy of Racist Medieval Europe. He's on fire, Greg Sheridan. Now, John Howard is quoted in this article as saying he thinks it's too early to tell whether the Ramsey model of working through the big universities could actually work. But what we do know is this. The National Tertiary Education Union and the ANU Students Association objected on the basis that Tony Abbott, who's a Ramsey board member, as I mentioned, wrote a recent article in Quadrant saying that the degrees it sponsored would not just be about Western civilization, but in favor of Western civilization. How outrageous is that? A center for Western civilization wants to promote the values that we cherish, that drive people to want to come to this country, that have delivered more prosperity around the world. And quite frankly, Western civilization is the building block of everything that we enjoy in this country. I think living in the West is preferable to living anywhere else. And it just seems a pity that we're not allowed to advocate for it because the Tertiary Education Union and the ANU Students Association object too highly of it. You know, as a conservative, I'm appalled by our universities. I'm appalled that they shut down debate, that they are not interested in the flourishing of ideas and the robust to and fro of competing value systems and ideas. It is all one way. If you support Israel, you're demonized. If you want to stand up for the traditional views of the world, the social mores, you're demonized, you're heckled. If you want to go in there and argue in case of tradition, of values, of principles, of normality, you will be penalized through the university system. It is not working for us. It's becoming an indoctrination workshop rather than a battle of intellectual rigor. We can't accept that anymore. And I think the government needs to step up to the plate and say, well, if you're not going to produce things that are going to actually benefit Australia, we've got to reassess our entire funding model. Because right now, universities are massive businesses. I think they're helping to actually destroy the minds of our best and brightest rather than encourage them to be all they can be. Let me know what you think. Corey@coreybernardi.com. Send me a voicemail or an email and we'll get into it in next week's Your Say.
Like what you hear? Support the Australian Conservatives at conservatives.org.au.
It's time for a brief walk through history, but we're not dealing with Australian history this week. We're dealing with an international incident that occurred on the 4th of June in 1989. Some of you may be aware of it. It's known as the Tiananmen Square Massacre, but in China, where it actually occurred, it's known as the June 4th Incident. Now, it happened that thousands of student protesters in the democracy movement, as it was known, were killed by the Chinese army. They were either shot by rifles or mowed down by armoured vehicles and tanks. Thousands were arrested before, during, and after the massacre. That is a tyrannical regime that was stifling freedom of expression and freedom of assembly. And the protest began when the ousted General Secretary of the Communist Party, he was a symbol of reform for students, labour activists and intellectuals. He died in April of 1989. He was 73. And initially, these well-wishers gathered in Tiananmen Square to mourn his death. But over a week or two, thousands and thousands of people had marched into the square and effectively an occupation movement had set in. And by the time then socialist Soviet Union leader Mikhail Gorbachev, who was obviously a close friend of China, he was visiting in early June, the Chinese communist regime got tired of the obstinacy and the increasing international embarrassment, if I can put it like that. And so it declared martial law and quickly sent in the army to break up the protests and crush any remaining dissent. The vision of one man standing in front of a line of tanks was perhaps one of the most empowering visions that I remember from my early adulthood. One man. The tank stopped. But I don't think that man was ever heard from again. So let's be under no illusions. Communism is the enemy of Western civilization. Communism is the enemy of the people. We need to celebrate freedom. We need to be mindful that government that is big enough to provide everything for us is big enough to take everything away from us. I'll be back.
This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Well, listeners, there's never a shortage of things that make me go, and I try and pick a couple up every week for you, and we also include it in our weekly blog. But this week we're going to go to England, and we're going to discuss a ban from a healthy school to prevent people bringing packed lunches. Imagine how subversive the people who bring packed lunches to school must be. They probably come from heteronormative backgrounds or something. But anyway, the school says you're not allowed to bring a packed lunch. In honour of diversity and healthy eating, you're allowed to choose from a hot halal meat meal or a gluten-free vegetarian dish or a pasta pot or a baguette. Apparently providing family-cooked meals, home-cooked family-style meals, even though they're not home-cooked or family-style, helps to bridge the poverty gap. How absurd is that? You're not allowed to bring the food of your choice or the food that your family provides you with, but you've got to be forced to consume a halal meal or a vegetarian meal in the name of diversity. This is the nanny state gone mad. And speaking of the nanny state gone mad, another thing closer to home that's really piquing my conscience this week is what's happening and continues to happen to Sonia Kruger. Sonia Kruger is a media personality. She was on the Today Show about 2 years ago where she said she's got concerns about immigration. She wanted a complete ban on Muslims entering Australia. And it was basically in response to a column by Andrew Bolt, but also attached to some atrocity that had happened somewhere in the world that identified Muslims as the perpetrators. And it's quite rational to say, well, why are we allowing these potential threats in here? Shouldn't we be considering what we're doing? But whether you agree with Sonia Kruger on that or not, the fact is she wasn't allowed to have an opinion and she was smashed for it by the PC brigade. And in the end, smashing her and taking her off TV for a period of time and trying to character assassinate it wasn't good enough because a racial vilification complaint was lodged with a civil and administrative tribunal over her statement. Now, why you would lodge a complaint, a racial vilification complaint, when Muslim is not a race is beyond me. You can have African Muslims, you can have Middle Eastern Muslims, you can have Russian Muslims, you can have Australian Muslims, there's Aboriginal Muslims, there's Muslims from all corners of the earth. They're not all one race. So, you know, these fools who entertain this need to get a biology lesson, I suspect. Anyway, the issue is that she is still having to fight this complaint. There was an application to have it dismissed without a hearing, but this was refused. And the complaint was made by a chap who the Daily Telegraph described as a serial offence taker. The tribunal heard that this chap, Sam Ekemawi, had been involved in 32 hearings before courts and tribunals because he gets upset at someone else having an opinion. The poor petal. Anyway, the matter is still through this tribunal 2 years later. It's appalling, and I think we should be outraged about it, and that's why we've started the hashtag I Stand With Sonia. Let me know if you do too.
This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Thanks for listening in. It's now time for your say, and I'm not sure quite what triggers the avalanche of emails that come my way, but they often have a very similar theme every single week. So something has to set them off. Sometimes it's something I've done in the media. Sometimes it's external stories. But clearly, many of you are concerned about very, very similar things. And the hot point, I've got to say, this week has been about migration. Many of them, like this email from John, who says, "Can you advise to what extent Australia's agreements with the UN are committing us to take in refugees and taking in Muslims? Do you think Australia should withdraw from UN agreements so Australia can do what is best for Australia rather than what is dictated to by the UN? Do you think Australia's recent ongoing immigration rate is excessive? And what are your party's policies on immigration?" Right, where do I start with that, John? Firstly, Australia's recent and ongoing immigration rate is excessive. We simply cannot keep up with it. Our policy is to halve migration right off the bat, to take it down from about 200,000 to 100,000-odd until we can assess exactly how many migrants we should be taking and whether we can keep up with it. And the simple problem is this. Governments are not keeping up with the infrastructure. So whilst, you know, governments and businesses love big population growth because it grows the economy, it's impacting negatively on all of us in many respects anyway, because of congestion, because of access to services, because there's too many migrants now that are actually on the welfare queue rather than anything else, or kicking in to making our country even stronger economically, culturally, and socially. So the UN, of course, has some impact on this because we did sign up to this convention on the treatment of refugees. It was designed after World War II to deal with those fleeing Western Europe pretty much. But now, of course, it's just being used by economic refugees that are gaming the system. The premise of the international agreement was that if someone sought asylum from their original place because they were unsafe, you had to offer it to them. But now what we have is people leaving the Middle East, going through multiple other countries where they're safe, they're perfectly safe, but paying people to get to Australia because there's a better welfare check here for them and a better quality of life. People are gaming the system, and they did under Labor. They had 50,000 people a year, I think, were coming in, and they were resettled here. It was out of control. To their credit, Tony Abbott and Malcolm Turnbull, the coalition government, have actually put a stop to that insidious trade, but they haven't put a stop to this humanitarian refugee intake, which is adding something in the region of 16 to 18,000 people a year here. And some of these people, 10 years hence, will still be on welfare. When I'm talking some of them, in certain demographics or certain populations, there will be 90% of them still on welfare. Now, we can't sustain that. We've got too few people paying tax in this country already. We don't need to bring in any more. So our party policy is we want to reform the visa system. We want to withdraw from the United Nations refugee agreement because it's not acting in our interest. We can still take displaced people, but we should do it under our own terms and conditions. And I certainly would be addressing the number of migrants that are coming here. Not because I'm opposed to migration, but because I want it to work in Australia's economic, social, and cultural interest. Now, John's also written to me. He says, "I like your podcast. Good on you, John. I enjoy hearing you expose Islamic corruption, violence, and working against our way of life." Well, that's because Islam is not compatible with our democratic values. It's not compatible with our concept of human rights and about how we treat each other. And if you're in any doubt about that at all, go to an Islamic country, go to the Middle East, assess how women are treated there, how gays are treated, how freedom of speech and freedom of religion is treated, and you'll recognise that there is a vast difference to what we expect here. But John says, "Can you advise which political party I should vote for that will be most effective at cutting immigration rates and stopping Muslim immigration?" Well, John, they're two different questions. Ultimately, you should vote for the Australian Conservatives because we will provide a credible and principled assessment of every policy that comes our way. And if we have enough senators, we will be able to guide governments down a better path, no matter who informs government. But ultimately, the coalition have a better record on migration than Labor. but they still need someone to keep them on the straight and narrow, and that should be the Australian Conservatives. William writes, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on the following, which repeatedly activates my grey matter. Given Australia is a huge landmass, do you think we'll be able to continue to maintain control of our population growth? That's a political question, William. It's a political and defence question, but initially, politics is going to determine how many migrants we have here. You know, the domestic population growth is really factored in, not through birth rates anymore, but through migration. I regret we're not having enough babies to continue to grow our population, but nonetheless, that is an individual choice for couples and families. But ultimately, migration is going to shape the future demographics of our country. It's also a defence question because, you know, if you want to look 100 years into the future, of course, our resources, our land is going to be extremely attractive and valuable to perhaps what is the growing dominant military presence in our region, that is China. In, you know, the century to come, China will have billions of people. It would have, I think, the world's largest economy. It will be an economic centre that will, I think, eclipse New York and London. And they will be perhaps the strongest military power too. Now, all of those things are not necessarily cause for alarmism, but we should be absolutely aware that what we have will be coveted by many. And we don't want a military invasion. We don't want a stealth invasion. We don't want foreign governments coming in and buying up our strategic resources, not for our benefit, but for theirs. Elizabeth, see what I mean? This is another question. Hi, is it true Corey opposed a ban on Muslim immigrant? Well, Elizabeth, I guess you've been following some memes put out by, you know, an alternative political party. But actually, Elizabeth, we have a very sophisticated, a pretty common sense approach to migration. It's not ruled by colour, creed or ethnicity. It's ruled by the type of person that we want in our country, what is going to make us economically, culturally and socially stronger. Now, if you're going to ban a group of people simply on their religious belief system, you undermine an extraordinary principle, because if you can do that to Muslims, what's not to say that someone else won't come in and say, well, we don't want any more Jews here, or we don't want any more Buddhists or any more Catholics or any more Christians for that matter. You can't make blanket rules like this and maintain your credibility, because there are exceptions to it. But it comes back to this. We want to make sure that everyone that comes to this country is doing it for the right reasons, that is going to integrate, that is going to fit in and make us stronger, not live off the system, not undermine our way of life and our laws. We've got enough people in this country already doing that. We've just got to make a critical assessment at every time. And where there are high-risk countries, many in the Middle East, many in Africa, where corruption abounds, where the wrong people are sometimes getting access to preferential treatment because of, you know, who's controlling the visa system, we've got to be very circumspect. And I think we've got to do a lot of onshore processing here rather than allowing visas to be granted by areas where corruption is endemic. And we recently saw that in South Africa, actually, with some Nigerians. Marcus writes, I'd like to hear your thoughts on what I believe is a war on boys, men and masculinity. It seems today in Western culture there's a bias against being male. You know, Marcus, this is interesting. A person whom I respect, who is perhaps conservative, not in the sense that I am, but they are just very circumspect about their judgments. They're very learned, occupy a very strong role, made a very similar point to me the other day. He said, you know, I'm worried about the future that my sons will have, because everything that they represent, which is they come from a good family, a traditional family, they come from a wealthy family, they're white and they're male, appears to be subject to attack. And he goes, I just wonder whether they will ever be able to be their true selves because of what is happening in society. And I can't help but be concerned about that too. As the father of two sons, I want to make sure they can be their best selves. They're adults now, or nearly adults, the youngest one. But they've been spared the horrors of this whole gender fluidity, this undermining of the culture and the values and the traditions through the education system, partly because they got to go to a very good school, but importantly because both their mother and I tried to reinforce normal values at home. That's not to stereotype them. It's not to say they haven't been able to have their own mind and their disagreements, but to, I guess, reinforce the cultural underpinnings, the expectations that society has, the values and, dare I say it, the courtesies that we should all be observing as often as possible. Finally, Brian has sent me a note, a quick note, to say I love the Common Sense podcast. Thank you, Brian. I look forward to listening each week. I particularly like the Australian history segments. Thank you, Brian. I will keep them coming because if we forget our history, we're not going to be knowledgeable enough about how to avoid the mistakes of yesteryear and make tomorrow even better. That's your say for this week.
Do you think you've got what it takes? Become a member. Be part of the conservative revolution at conservatives.org.au.
That's all the common sense we've got time for this week. Thanks so much for tuning into the Weekly Dose of Common Sense podcast. I always love hearing from you, so keep the feedback coming through either via email, corey@coreybernardi.com, or record a voice memo and on your phone and send it through to me at the same address. Otherwise, leave a comment on our blog at coreybernardi.com. It's always good to be part of the Common Sense Revolution. See you next week.
Enjoying your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi? You need to get on board with the Australian Conservatives. Go to conservatives.org.au and join the party.